This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last week, President Bush reversed more than 30 years of American policy and recognized India as a legitimate nuclear weapons state. Proponents say that the world's largest democracy is an increasingly important economic and military power, that this agreement is strategic realism. India is not about to give up its nuclear arsenal now, and in return, they say, India agreed to separate its military and civilian nuclear programs, to allow inspections and allow international safeguards, and buy technology from the U.S. Proponents add that more nuclear power plants in India means fewer oil-fired power plants. Critics say the deal amounts to a get-out-of-jail-free card for a country that violated previous agreements on nuclear technology and still won't sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And they say the agreement sends the wrong message to Pakistan, Iran, North Korea, and to the rest of the world, that it's okay when America's friends build nuclear arsenals, but a matter for international sanctions or even war when someone else tries to join the club. The deal must still be approved by Congress, which may not be easy. We'll have more on that later. It violates the rules of the Nuclear Suppliers Group, and India will have to reach an agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency on the terms of the safeguards agreement. Later in the program, Susan Cook Kettridge joins us on the opinion page this week with a personal story about the black market in human body parts. But first, the U.S., India, and the bomb. If you have questions about the terms of the deal and what it means for global security, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Joseph Cirincione is Senior Associate and Director for Nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Neil.
India's nuclear weapons aren't going to go away no matter what Washington does, so why not make the best deal you can?
This is not the best deal you can make. This is a giveaway. Congressman Markey, who you're going to have later on in the show, calls it a national security policy disaster, and I agree. First of all, you're violating our own solemn commitments under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. We promise not to encourage or assist another country's nuclear weapons program. That's what this does. By agreeing to sell nuclear reactors, nuclear fuel to India, we free up their resources, which they can use in their military reactors, to double or triple the number of nuclear weapons they make every year. That sets off a potential arms race in Asia. Pakistan's not going to stand idly by, nor is China, if India starts increasing its annual production. What's Japan going to do? That's one set of questions. Meanwhile, you've weakened the main instrument you have for constraining other countries' nuclear programs. This week in Vienna, we are pitting ourselves against Iran, holding them to their violations of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the very treaty we have just weakened in this sweetheart deal with India. Fortunately, before any of this can go through, there are five or six U.S. laws that have to be changed to do that, and Congress doesn't appear to be in a mood to do any of this quickly. So there's going to be a lot of discussion on this before this deal is finalized.
But isn't it a positive development that India would agree to separate civilian and nuclear parts of its policy, of its power, nuclear program?
No, it's not. Basically, what happens is they've got about 22 reactors that either exist or are planned, 15 actually operating now, the rest planned in the next few years. They've agreed that two-thirds will go under inspection. But the inspections are designed to make sure that no country is diverting fuel from peaceful uses to weapons purposes. But we already know that India is going to have a third of its reactors doing exactly that, just making weapons. So what's the point of having these other reactors put under international inspections? What's happened here is that the president has given a green light to India's nuclear program and to expanding it. He didn't have to do it this way. Even if you agree that we should find a way to aid India's nuclear power production, there were ways to structure this deal. For example, get India to agree to cap its nuclear weapons production, not to produce any more weapons material. We don't produce any more. Russia doesn't. France, United Kingdom, Israel, China, none of the other countries that have nuclear weapons produce it. Only India and Pakistan are still producing it. He could have gotten this trade-off. That would have solved a lot of the proliferation problems. The president apparently didn't even try.
Mohammed Al-Baradei, the head of the IAEA and the recent recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, seems to think it's a pretty good deal, though.
Well, the IAEA wears, and the director general wears two hats. They sell nuclear power. They're in the business of promoting nuclear power, and I think that's the hat Mohammed al-Baradei is wearing. He also, I think, is trying to make the best of a bad deal. He's pragmatic enough to see it coming down the road, thinks he can't stop it, and he's hoping that somehow he can enlist the United States, India, Pakistan together to start reducing their nuclear weapons. I think he's taking too rosy a view of this particular deal.
Well, let's get another voice in on this now. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Ambassador Raminder Singh Jussel, Chargé d'Affaires at the Indian Embassy here in Washington, D.C. And, Mr. Ambassador, thanks very much for joining us here in Studio 3A.
Thank you for having me.
Why is this a good deal for India?
I think this is a good deal for India because it enhances India's energy security. When you look at the debate that is going on, there is an attempt that is made to divert the debate from the central thesis of this understanding, which has nothing to do with nuclear weapons, but is essentially a way to be able to address India's future energy security requirements. And this whole understanding is predicated on a number of important premises. First of all, India has had an impeccable non-proliferation record. And everybody understands and knows that India has had nuclear assets for more than 50 years. We had the first Indian indigenously built nuclear reactor that went critical in 1956. And from then until now, there has not been any case of nuclear proliferation from India to any country. That is the first premise. The second one is that it's not as if that we built a civil nuclear understanding. We constructed a civil nuclear understanding, and the strategic relationship between India and the United States flows from that or is built on it. In fact, it is the other way around. As the strategic relationship between India and the United States evolved, it also, out of that edifice, out of that architecture, flowed the India-US civil nuclear understanding. And I want to underscore that this understanding is only about meeting India's civilian nuclear requirements for energy security for the future. It has nothing to do with nuclear weapons.
And we know India is an energy starved country. It needs more energy, and if it's not going to be nuclear power, it will probably be oil power. But let me ask you another question. What about the point that Joseph Cerincione made, that this separation allows India to increase the number of resources devoted to military resources and increase the number of nuclear weapons?
As I said, we should focus ourselves on what has been achieved.
Is he right or is he wrong?
No, I think he's wrong in focusing, in changing the focus of the debate from the civil nuclear power and the civil nuclear mm-hmm. understanding to an issue of nuclear weapons. I mean, the essential deal that we have done and the essential understanding we have reached with the United States is that there will be very strong impermeable firewalls between India's civilian program and India's strategic program. And whatever we receive in terms of cooperation with countries from outside, it will be, it will not be diverted to the strategic side, and it will be devoted exclusively to the civilian production of electricity and energy.
But more of India's domestic nuclear resources could be devoted to the military.
No, India has a credible minimum deterrent. It has been its policy. We also have a nuclear posture of no first use. We are committed to work with the United States and other countries towards a verifiable fissile material cutoff treaty. And India has very strong export control regulations. On top of that, we have agreed to separate our civil and military facilities mm-hmm. and to build very strong firewalls. So the question is, if you look at the mutuality of understandings and mutuality of commitments which have been entered into by both countries on July 18, it enjoins upon India to do the separation, to negotiate with the IAEA for an additional protocol and a safeguards agreement. And the United States would work with the U.S. Congress to change the laws that will enable the cooperation to go forth, as well as work with the NSG members to enable civil nuclear cooperation to go ahead with India within these strictly defined parameters.
NSG, Nuclear Suppliers Group. Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join us, it's 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And we'll begin with Bruce. Bruce is with us from Grand Junction in Colorado.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I listen to your show as often as I can. I just wanted to find out why India has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And I'll take my call off here.
Thank you, Bruce. Ambassador?
Well, India did not sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty for reasons which I will just explain. But at the same time, India has voluntarily taken on responsibilities and controls, which I would say are even NPT plus. Mm-hmm. At the same time, India is a member of all other regimes which are meant towards arms disarmament, such as the Chemical Weapons Convention, the Biological Weapons Convention, and India had taken upon itself to ensure that there was no leakage of material, equipment, and technology to third countries. We did not sign the NPT because at the time that it was signed, it was our judgment that there was an imbalance in the responsibilities and obligations of the nuclear weapon states and the non-nuclear weapon states. And hence, we did not sign it. But we have neither carried out a campaign against it, we have not undermined it, and at the same time, we have taken upon ourselves voluntarily controls that are NPT plus.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll find out why India won't sign it now that it is a nuclear weapon state. Anyway, if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. We're also going to be joined by two members of Congress, one in favor of this agreement, one opposed, and ask about its prospects in the United States Congress. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last week's agreement between India and the U.S. could end a three-decades-old ban on the sale of civilian nuclear equipment and fuel to India. The deal must still be approved. Our guests are Joseph Cirincione of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and Ambassador Raminder Singh Jissel, Chargé d'Affaires at the Indian Embassy here in Washington, D.C. Of course, you're invited to join us, 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And Ambassador, let me ask you the question still hanging from the end of that first segment. If India is now accepted as a nuclear weapon state, will it sign the NPT now?
Under the provisions of the NPT as a nuclear weapon state, that's what I believe is difficult under the current situation in the world. So therefore, we have a civil nuclear understanding that takes into account the reality as it is, which is that India has acted with controls on itself and as an NPT nuclear weapon state in any case. So it was at this point, therefore, to try to go with the present circumstances. But as a nuclear weapon state, India, as a nuclear weapon state, would be happy to join the NPT, but as an NWS.
As a
nuclear weapon state.
As a nuclear weapon state. Joseph Cirincione, if India signs under those conditions?
Can't do it. Can't sign. The Non-Proliferation Treaty only allows countries to join without nuclear weapons. So they would have to leave their weapons at the door. India is not going to do that. There's no way to amend the treaty to let them in.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Ed. Ed's calling from Anchorage in Alaska.
Hi. My comment is that it seems to me that Iran is making the same argument that it needs more nuclear energy for its future energy security. So how is this argument different from the one just made by your guest? And also, it seems to me that India maybe is likely to use nuclear weapons in a conflict with Pakistan over Kashmir as Iran is against Israel. So again, and I fail to see the difference between the two cases.
Mm-hmm. Joseph Cirincione, more to the point, Pakistan thinks that it should be getting the same kind of a deal that India gets.
This is the problem when you try to make these exceptions. I mean, what's happened here is we've had this 40 years of an international standard built up, bipartisan support in the United States, support around the globe. The demands of the Indian nuclear weapons lobby have been well known. They've been arguing for this deal since the 60s and 70s. Richard Nixon wouldn't give in. Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, the president's own father, Ronald Reagan, wouldn't give in. President Bush has done what no previous president has been willing to do, to give active encouragement and assistance to India's nuclear weapons program. And so, of course, other countries say, what about me? Pakistan already has said, we want that same deal. The president's in a bind now. He doesn't want to give that same deal to Pakistan. This is going to make it more difficult for Pakistani-U.S. relations.
To be fair, the ambassador is right. India, there's never been any suggestion that India has been a nuclear proliferator, and there is a...
Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. This program was born in original sin. They never signed the NPT, but how did they get the bomb in the first place? They got reactors from Canada and assistance from the United States under the Atoms for Peace program, where they promised to use them only for peaceful purposes. This was in the 60s. In the early 70s, they illegally took fuel from those reactors, extracted the plutonium, and blew it up in the deserts and mountains of India in their first nuclear test in 1974, breaking their solemn agreements with Canada and the United States.
True, but
that's proliferation.
But they have not sent it anywhere else. Pakistan certainly has.
Pakistan has multiple digressions. India has several. And India's record hasn't been pure since then. They are the third most sanctioned nation by the United States after China and North Korea for illegally diverting materials that we believe could be used for weapons of mass destruction programs in other countries.
Mm-hmm. If you wanted to respond, Ambassador Just.
I think just to respond to the observation made by one of your listeners, which is to talk about India, Pakistan, and Iran in the same breath. I think this is comparing three completely different situations and different entities. Iran is a country which is a signatory to the NPT as a non-nuclear weapon state, and it has undertaken certain obligations, certain commitments internationally. And therefore, it's been our position that Iran should abide by those obligations that it has voluntarily taken and commitments it has voluntarily entered into. Mm. As far as the India and Pakistan cases are concerned, the two things are like comparing apples and oranges. India has not proliferated nuclear weapons, equipment, technology, or know-how to any third country.
Hmm. And is Ed, the caller Ed's comparison to Israel apt?
No, I think that is, again, Israel is also in a sense that India, like India, Israel is not a member of the, is not a signatory to the NPT. It has its own priorities, its own commitment, its own national policies. So I think the cases should be taken as individual cases, and in the case of India, the whole understanding is predicated on a very long track record, an impeccable track record. And just because India's track record can be taken for granted, it should neither be trivialized or its importance minimized.
Ed, thank you very much for the call. As we mentioned, the U.S.-India deal must be approved by Congress. It violates current U.S. law. And joining us now is Congressman Joseph Crowley, Democrat from New York, who supports the deal. He's the former co-chair of the Congressional Caucus on India and Indian Americans. He's with us from our bureau in New York. Congressman, thanks very much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be with you.
Why do you think this is a good deal?
Well, I think this is a historic step forward in the relationship between both India and the United States. Although not a perfect deal, I think it's one that puts two-thirds, as was stated before, two-thirds of the reactors that are civilian use under the IAEA watchful eye. And not only from a proliferation standpoint, from a safety standpoint, these reactors will now be under the international standards, safety standards that the U.S. has come to rely upon, the world has come to rely upon. So I think it broadens the relationship between the United States and India, two great democracies. India is a longstanding democracy. a country that I think because of the Cold War, it's taken a good long time for the U.S. to warm up in terms of our relationship with India. And this is giving an opportunity to do that as well, getting India further away from the use of fossil fuel to limit the level of greenhouse emissions that they will need to in terms of really moving this huge economy that's on the road right now. So for a number of reasons, I think that this makes sense. And the other is that the NPT, which I support, the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, I think it also has to stand for Non-Proliferation Tent. We have to find a way to bring these countries into the formal non-proliferation community. India is not a proliferator, albeit its history is its history. It has not transferred any of its technology to any other state, unlike its neighbor Pakistan. It finds itself in a part of the world surrounded by China, Pakistan, and now potentially down the road, Iran. To ask India to simply put away its toys and not play with them again and not expect that of other countries around it, which they will not comply with, and certainly now a signatory to the NPT, Iran is actually moving forward with its own development of nuclear weapons. That's a threat to the sovereignty in many respects of India itself. So I don't think it's realistic to expect them to put away their toys and their nuclear weapons and sign on to the NPT.
But doesn't it tell countries like Pakistan, Iran, and North Korea that if you build a bomb and hang on long enough, the United States eventually will come around?
I think they have completely different histories. And, just looking at all of them, not one of the three countries you just mentioned are democracies or have the longstanding democratic principles that the country of India has, which, by the way, is also going to be very soon the largest country in the world in terms of population. Here's a country that will have over 1 billion people in it. It does not have its full say at the UN, is not a permanent member to the Security Council at the UN, yet they represent a significant portion of the world's population. All things being perfect, would I prefer to see India as a non-nuclear power? I'd like to see all countries as non-nuclear weapons powers. But the reality is we have to deal with India. It is our friend. It's a strategic partner in the future for the United States in balancing off China and other countries in that region. And for that reason, I think it's a good treaty.
And how much trouble do you anticipate this legislation is going to have in Congress?
Well, I think, and I came out of the era of no nukes, and I have tremendous respect for Ed Markey and others within the Congress. I just think that this is a different world we're living in today. It's not the same world of the 1960s, 70s, or 80s, and I think we have to come to terms with that. I think that this will have significant support, but I also think it will certainly have significant opposition, and a number of the people I just mentioned leading that charge, I believe Senator Lugar as well, has some significant problems with it. It's not up to me to say. This is the administration's deal. They'll bring it to Congress, and it's up to them to sell it to the members of the House and to the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line, and this will be Richard. Richard's with us from Fayetteville in North Carolina.
Thank you very much. I'm really curious about the ambassador's view of Pakistan's point of view and action, and what might he do to soothe it?
Ambassador?
I'm afraid I didn't quite catch the question.
Richard was asking about Pakistan's views and how Pakistan might be soothed on this question.
Well, I think the president, when he was asked about this question as to why India and not Pakistan, gave a very apt answer. He said these two countries have different needs, different histories. And that, I think, puts the finger at the central point of the whole issue. It's comparing India to other countries that have been mentioned. It's like it's comparing apples and oranges. They are two different situations.
Joseph Cerencioni, are these two different situations?
They are different countries, but a country's geopolitical orientation has nothing to do with whether that country is willing to go to war or willing to use nuclear weapons.
Right.
Being a democracy has nothing to do with a country's choice of using nuclear weapons. We use them.
Congressman Crowley, this question is certainly going to come up if you treat India this way. Its rival, Pakistan, also a critical American ally. We cannot conduct the ongoing operations in Afghanistan without the help of Pakistan. If there's going to be an effort to get Osama bin Laden, we need Pakistan. But they're going to want the same kind of a deal.
Well, I think that the Pakistani government did irreparable damage to itself in allowing AQ Khan to spread nuclear technology and weapons technology to other countries, including Iran and North Korea, as you mentioned. I think that in of itself has put them, for a very, very long time on the D list in terms of maybe even the F list in terms of its ability to ever get a similar type of deal with the United States. This is an exception. It's an exception because I just came back from India. I was there just prior to the president's trip and talking to a number of the officials there. They see themselves as a different country in different circumstances, and rightfully so. I think they are.
Richard, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And we're talking today about an agreement with U.S. and India on nuclear power and nuclear weapons. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email question that we have. How is cutting a deal with Indian counterparts to perform an end run around the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty not a failure to execute U.S. law? How is the president not in violation of treaty obligations?
I think the president is in violation of the treaty obligations. Article 1 of the Nonproliferation Treaty says that we will not do anything to encourage or assist another country's nuclear weapons program. This directly encourages and assists India's nuclear weapons program.
Congressman Crowley?
Well, I think the reality is that, again, as I mentioned before, the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, I think also has to take into circumstances the tent. How do we bring in countries like India, non-proliferators, into that tent? And I think this is a vehicle, an exception to that, that will do so. This is, as I said before, this is up to the administration to sell to both the Congress and the Senate. Obviously, the Senate, many of them are perturbed about the way in which this deal was put together in the first place. The announcement of July 18th caught everyone off guard. No one was expecting this, certainly not the senators whose charge it is to ratify treaties. But there are a number of laws that need to be changed as well. Members of the House weren't all that thrilled when the announcements were made without their consultation. Having said that, it's moved forward. The president's historic trip to India has moved that forward now. And quite frankly, it's in the administration's hands to pitch that case both to the Senate, to the Congress, and then to the other countries that participate in the NPT treaty as well.
Congressman Crowley, I wanted to thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Joseph Crowley, a Democrat from New York. He joined us today from our bureau in New York City. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Nick. Nick's calling us from West Tisbury in Massachusetts.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question, which is kind of incidental, and then a comment, which is actually much more significant, I think, and having to do with the overall subject. And the question was that occurred to me at first was that we have long established that the problem with nuclear energy isn't so much the danger of it anymore, like these meltdowns that we talked about in Chernobyl, which is hopefully a thing of the past, but more to the point, what do we do with the waste, you know, and the byproducts, which is the real problem? And my question was really, how do we reconcile encouraging these other countries, you know, to develop peaceful nuclear energy when we don't know what to do with it ourselves? It's like suddenly we've forgotten, you know, about the real problem with nuclear energy is, you know, the 10,000-year waste situation. I have another comment, which is, I think, is much more significant.
Well, let's see if we can get a quick response from the ambassador on the nuclear waste question.
I think this is a question of choices that countries have to make to meet their energy requirements for the future. The Indian economy is growing at something like 8% every year. We have only a very small percentage of our energy needs, our electricity needs, met from nuclear power. We have coal, which has a very high ash content and can spew pollutants into the air. We have hydroelectric power, but there are limits to that. We are dependent on hydrocarbons, oil and gas, up to over 75% of India's requirements. So for us, a question of having nuclear energy is an inescapable reality. It is a fact for the future. So therefore, it's related to energy security. Mm-hmm. And I think those kind of choices are being made in many countries, including in the United States, which is revisiting its whole approach to nuclear energy. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a requirement of energy and a need of energy security for the future.
And Nick, I can give you 30 seconds.
All right. Thank you. I guess the main point is where all this is heading is, you know, where everybody needs the energy, and certainly the U.S. is in no position to tell another country that it can't develop. I think we're finally beginning to see now with India and China developing how the shoe doesn't fit so well on the other foot. I think conservatives for a long time have argued, hey, we're the biggest and the strongest, and to do that we need more and more and more. So it seems like nobody's going to be happy unless we have a continuous parking lot across the entire nation, you know, where everybody's running a hamburger stand, everybody is so industrious and industrial, and we're getting further and further away from nature and the wonderful, beautiful things of the world into this cyclone. Where
well, we're getting closer and closer to our time limits, Nick, I'm afraid, so
okay.
I'm going to have to end it there.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, when we come back, we'll talk with a prominent congressional critic of the deal. Ed Markey from Massachusetts will join us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that colleges which accept federal money must allow military recruiters on campus. The justices unanimously rejected a free speech challenge from law schools that claimed they should not be forced to associate with military recruiters. And 12 jurors and 6 alternates have been selected to decide whether admitted Al-Qaeda plotter Zacharias Moussaoui will live or die. In order to get a death sentence, prosecutors will have to prove a direct link between Moussaoui and the 9/11 attacks. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today, we're talking about the nuclear agreement reached between India and the U.S. during President Bush's visit to India last week. Our guests are Joseph Cerincione, Senior Associate and Director for Nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and Ambassador Raminder Singh Jussal, the Chargé d'Affaires at the Indian Embassy. And joining us now is Congressman Ed Markey, a Democrat from Massachusetts, ranking member on the House Energy Committee, a prominent opponent of this proposed agreement. And Congressman Markey, nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
What are your concerns about this agreement? Either way, no matter what Washington does, India is going to have nuclear weapons.
Well, that's right. They have nuclear power right now. They have nuclear weapons right now. But we, that is the United States and the rest of the world, have the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty still intact. And this week, we're beginning to escalate the process by which the world is trying to tell Iran at the UN Security Council that the world does not want Iran to generate new nuclear weapons from its uranium enrichment program. Meanwhile, last week, President Bush, went to India and told the Indians that they would be able to decide if their fast breeder reactor program is inside or outside of full scope safeguards. And India is a country which is not a signatory to the Nonproliferation Treaty, as is Iran. And so it's really going to complicate the world's ability to deal with this growing crisis, and that's the only word that you can use, an underlined crisis in Iran, as Iran moves closer to gaining nuclear weapons. And only if we can keep the integrity of the Nonproliferation Treaty intact do we have a chance of being successful in Iran. And I'm afraid that this deal with India really does undermine it.
India describes it, and the ambassador was here to describe it to us earlier, as saying this is not a deal about nuclear weapons. This is a deal about nuclear power, and on any number of levels, more nuclear power in India means less fossil fuel needs to be burned. It reduces, perhaps, the rise in the price of oil. All kinds of benefits accrue, including safeguards and inspections on those civilian power plants.
Well, the United States still generates 52% of its electricity from coal, believe it or not, and India generates 65 to 70% of its electricity from coal. A far better deal for the United States would have been to cut a deal with India in the clean coal technology sector, a multi-billion-dollar deal, because India is going to continue to generate more than 65% of its electricity from coal. And as the ambassador pointed out, it's not clean coal. It's really dirty coal, upwards of 400,000 Indians die from respiratory illnesses each year. And so there the United States could have cut a deal, helped on climate change and public health issues, and kept the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty intact. Instead, what the Bush administration has decided to do is to agree to transfer nuclear materials for nuclear power electrical generation in India, but without imposing the safeguards that would be required on their fast breeder reactor program, on the 1,000 bombs worth of nuclear spent fuel that the Indians still have that could be reprocessed into nuclear weapons. And I'm afraid the net result is a negative for both climate change and for nuclear nonproliferation, whereas President Bush could have succeeded in extracting a win-win for our country and for the planet, and by the way, for India as well.
Let's get one last caller in on this question. This is Jack. Jack joins us from Mountain View in California.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question it goes to the moral foundation of this issue. I sense a moral outrage that somehow India should be allowed into this debate or into this club, whereas it would still have nuclear weapons. Unfortunately, the very premise of a sect of nations having nuclear weapons and everyone else being excluded is flawed. So nations obviously have tried to secure the minimum deterrent they need in order to survive in their local regions. And I sense this for Pakistan as well as for India. I'm old enough to remember when Russia was a rogue nation, the Soviet Union. I remember when China was developing its weapons, was testing it in the Pacific. So all of these have been rogue nations at some point. As an earlier audience participant mentioned, the key is about getting nations with good intentions and good systems and institutions to be in the tent rather than outside the tent so that you can have a system of global governance on this obviously very dirty and very nasty set of weapons of mass destruction. My question goes to, what is the moral foundation of this exclusive group which wants to ensure that no one else has this set of weapons?
And let's get a quick response. First from Congressman Markey.
Well, India does have nuclear weapons, and India is not going to give up their nuclear weapons. They want to expand their program. The question that this deal raises is a different one. If the United States can create a deal with India outside of the nuclear nonproliferation safeguards, in violation of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Act, our own domestic law, then why can't Pakistan then turn to China and try to create the very same situation? Of course, that would make the world much more dangerous. Why couldn't Iran turn to Russia and cut the very same deal? And for that matter, why couldn't Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, now for the price of receiving oil from his country, say to China or say to other countries, if you want my oil, give me nuclear power plants, but give me the same deal as the United States is giving India? That would be ultimately a very dangerous thing for the world. And that's why it's so dangerous. Each of us wants to help India. Each of us considers India to be a good friend. But I think there's a way of helping India in its electrical generating area without endangering the nuclear nonproliferation regime.
Ambassador Jessel?
The first issue of morality, I think the moral issue of this, the moral dimension of this issue should be put at rest by the fact that India has not proliferated and has an impeccable record on that score. But when you compare India with other countries that have been mentioned, and I hear the views of Congressman Markey with great respect, comparing India with other countries is a bit misplaced, because the problems with those countries predates India's understanding with the United States on the civil nuclear understanding. It's not as if this understanding has created these problems. Now, if there are problems which have to be addressed, those are on a separate track, and India is part of the international community's efforts to address those problems. But as far as India is concerned, the question of civil nuclear power as a source of energy is as important as other parts of it. It's not one to the exclusion of the other. Mm-hmm. We have to develop a holistic energy strategy.
And Joseph Cirincione, we'll give you the last word.
Every country thinks that its weapons are fine, and it's the other guy's weapons that are the problem. And in the case of India, they have chafed for years over the U.S. hypocrisy, denying India nuclear weapons while we maintain a huge arsenal, and they're right. President Bush would have been in a much stronger position if he had gone to India with decreasing U.S. nuclear weapons. Then you can convince India to decrease its own arsenals. And this is what the Indian and the American people want. 58% of the Indian people want no countries to have nuclear weapons. 66% of the American people feel the same way. It's time our governments got in sync with what our people really want.
Joseph Cerincione, thanks very much, as always, for being with us.
My pleasure, Neil.
Joseph Cerincione is Senior Associate and Director for Nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Congressman Markey, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Ed Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, ranking Democrat on the House Energy Committee, and Ambassador Raminder Singh Jussel, thank you very much for joining us here today in Studio 3A.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, it's Talk of the Nation's Opinion Page.